This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, and welcome to WWD Voices. I'm Evan Clark, Deputy Managing Editor of WWD, and I'm joined today by Jordan Fisher, CEO and founder of Standard AI, a pioneer in artificial intelligence that's helping retailers use these amazing new tools that we're still all trying to understand. Thanks so much for being here, Jordan.
Thanks for having me. Super excited.
Yeah, no. So maybe can we just start? Let's start. We want to go big on AI, but first let's start with what you're doing. Can you explain what you're doing with Standard AI and how you use artificial intelligence to change the retail experience?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, what we're really doing is trying to transform spaces. And what's really cool about computer vision is that it understands what's happening in our everyday, normal, boring spaces. So we put up cameras, we put them into convenience stores and micro markets and just other retail locations. And those cameras then understand what's happening in the store. They understand where products are, they understand where people are, how they're interacting with those products. And then we use that to deliver great experiences for both the shopper and for the retail employees and the retail HQ. And probably our most famous product is what we call autonomous checkout. And it's this ability for shoppers to walk in, grab items, walk out, and they get their receipt automatically. So you get to skip the line, you get to skip the drudgery, the sort of worst part of being in a store, and just focus on shopping and getting your receipt. So it kind of takes away all that pain and the boring aspects of shopping.
Right. So this is a technology that you work a lot right now in the convenience sector. So where you're buying quick stop food. But this is a technology that surely seems to be coming to the rest of retail as well. How, as you've got an early look at autonomous checkout, how does it change the experience in the store, and how might that change fashion?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yeah, I think, often we don't know how much better something can be until we experience it. But once you take away friction from a particular experience, it's really hard to go back. And I think we've all leveled up raised our expectations as shoppers and consumers when it comes to online shopping, as an example, where when I'm on an online portal, I'm about to check out and it starts asking me to put in my credit card and my zip code. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Right? Like, I put in my, doesn't my browser have my, like, can't you like, get this automatically through my Google SSO or whatever, like, why are you, introducing all this friction? Clearly you can get like, all these other sites have figured it out. Why can't you? And really that's like 10 seconds of work for me to take my credit card out. Right. But like, once you've removed that 10 seconds of friction, which we've all come to, expect when you have single click checkout on Amazon, etc., suddenly you bring that friction back and you're like, wow, I can never really, I really can't tolerate this. And I think we'll see and are seeing a similar phenomena in physical retail, and not just with checkout, autonomous checkout, but just in general. We've been raising the quality bar of the experiences that we expect in our physical stores too. And suddenly when you go back, it becomes a lot more painful. So how can we then take that and apply it to more verticals? We're focused on convenience, like you said, but I do think there will be, over the next couple of years, an expansion of this to grocery, drugstores, QSR, especially in fashion. How do we make a better fashion experience? I view fashion as this really high touch industry. So how can we, which is good, because the whole point of this technology is having an even better experience in the store. So can we further take away some of the drudgery on both the shopper and employee side in the fashion vertical, right? So having that high touch experience, and then afterwards you're good to go and you can just leave. The employees can focus on upselling, they can focus on, just packing up your goods, folding it nicely, putting it in a bag, and then, you're off to the races after that. That's just like a much, much lighter experience where you get to focus on all the good parts of shopping, which is trying things on and, getting to walk out with your goods at the end.
Right. So bringing a little bit more fun back into the experience, reducing the burden of that having to act of paying and the whole process.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think there's a ton of other value add then to the retailer as well. And, we're just now starting to launch products that are more on the analytical side. And if you think about e-commerce, one of the ways that you drive a better experience in e-commerce is through insights and analytics. Things like heat maps, where are people interacting, where does drop-off happen? You have this whole conversion funnel of people showing up to your site, and then sometimes they bounce because they can't see what they want immediately. They put something into their cart, and then they abandon that cart for some reason, right? But you have all this rich insights into what's happening, and that lets you drive a better experience. Maybe I need to be advertising this particular product better, or I need to drop the price of this particular product. And online retailers leverage that heavily to drive an amazing experience, which helps them drive sales, but it's better for the shopper too. You don't really have any of that in physical retail. There's no insights into what's happening inside of your store. You know that people walk in, you know people buy things, and you have nothing in between. So it's the other, you know, compelling aspect of computer vision is suddenly it says, well, wait a minute, I can show you the full conversion funnel in your store. Person walked in, they spent 2 minutes looking at, you know, this rack, they interacted with these two, pair of jeans. Ultimately, they banned the pair of jeans, and they went over and they bought this black sweater, because that's all I buy, it's black sweaters. And, you know, like, you get to see all of that rich, in an anonymized way, but you get to see all this rich data, which then helps you drive a better experience. You know, maybe this part of your store is not getting visibility, it's not getting traffic, and it's because it's in a dark corner, or because of the way your layout is, you just aren't driving people into a particular direction. So you get to get a much richer set of tools, which helps you drive a better store, drive a better store experience.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting because, you know, retailers have spent 100 years more, you know, since the dawn of time, kind of people at the checkout register or in the stores watching customers, trying to understand what they're doing, how they're operating, trying to give them a better experience. I mean, that's in some ways the whole retail gig. And you have what is it that AI is going to be able to do that a century worth of shopkeepers have not been able to do?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, humans are great at this stuff, right? Like we are intuition engines. We don't need, you know, what you see with AI today is it can often outperform humans, but it needs an incredible amount of data. Once you can get it a ton of data, it can often do better than that. But humans are amazing. We're these intuitive creatures that with, you know, much less data can make these great insights. And a store manager in their store probably has great insight into what's happening in their store. You know, they're intuiting that, you know, you have this dark corner where people aren't going. They see it, right? Like they're just out there looking, they're on the floor, they're seeing what's happening. They're seeing that, you know, these black t-shirts aren't converting well, and they're trying to make changes. You know, and often there's this tension between HQ and store managers where you want to partially empower store managers to be able to make these on the floor changes because they're the ones that have the intuition, versus HQ, which has some amount of sort of a global vision in terms of they see the sales, they see what's working, right? So like there's a little bit of tension between HQ, which has data, and on the ground, which has intuition. And I think what we want to do is we want to empower people on the ground, right? We want to give them even better data, because ultimately the data that HQ has is pretty limited. It doesn't have the same types of data that the store manager has, right? It doesn't have this vision piece of where are people, where are they interacting, where are people, you know, getting confused, etc. So suddenly we, as a technology provider, we get the same insights in some ways that the store manager has, but we get to quantize it. We get to, you know, see it across many stores, bring back those learnings and bring it back to the store manager. And at some point we might be confirming their intuition. That's great. But we also might be surfacing things that they hadn't seen. Really, it's about empowering them to have more insights to bring to bear.
So it sounds a little bit like in a perfect world, it's you have your best store manager who has seen every interaction at every store across the country and is able to kind of feed that intelligence up to what the supply chain is producing and down to the store associates who can, you know, interact more directly. Is that the right way to think about, I guess, is it possible today, or that's where we're headed, hopefully, maybe?
Already, I would say a combination of the two. You know, this is rapidly improving technology, and it already has a lot of, compelling aspects to it. But yeah, I think one of the things that I find compelling is you can take somebody and level them up. You give them the tools, and they can perform like one of your top performing operators or top performing store managers because you're giving them these insights that they just previously didn't have. You know, rather than hoping that your store manager has the right intuition, and some of them will, and some of them won't, and then you know, retail right today is fundamentally an operations based business, right? It's about people and finding quality people, incentivizing people. And that exists at these you know, at the ground level, the operator level, and the store manager level, et cetera, right? So like you're constantly working hard to find these store managers who have demonstrated this great intuition as one of their facets, right? Of course, they also have to be good managers, et cetera, right? And suddenly you take some of that pressure off and you say, wait a minute, with technology, we can provide that intuition. We can provide these better insights and we can apply that consistently across your entire fleet. So we'll be empowering your store managers to be best in class store operators. Let them focus on the things that are, you know, things only they can do, like managing store staff, as an example.
Right. So what's the, in this today or in the future or whatever, what's the interface between, for this kind of context, this running a retail store, what's the AI interface? Is it between, you know, do the consumers, are our consumers interacting with this AI, or is it just the people? Do people get their morning marching orders from their email now? Kind of what, how does, where do man and machine meet?
Yeah. So it starts with the sensors, which is cameras. And, you know, part of what gets me so excited about computer vision is cameras are sort of like a universal interface, right? If you think about other retail tech, you have to integrate with point of sale systems or inventory management systems or loyalty systems. And fundamentally, that's not hard to do. It's just, it's slow and laborious and kind of fractured. There's an insane number of loyalty programs, et cetera. So like if you're a tech company that's trying to provide some service and you have to do those integrations, it slows everything down. Because it's all custom. Every one of the interfaces is custom. What's cool about vision is that vision is just vision, right? There's photons bouncing off of the surface and you put a camera up and it understands what's happening. I don't need to go out and integrate with XYZ point of sale system. It's just cameras and we're, you know, in AI and we're off to the races in terms of understanding what's happening in the store. So that input, the sensor is, you know, it's almost like a free open, API to the world, to reality. It's like, you know, reality's API.
Right.
Which is great. And then how do you enter, like, so the input to the system is really easy in that sense. And then what is the output? Here, you still have to work. You still have to figure out how to reach back to the people in the store, whether it's the shoppers or the employees. And we do both. So we provide experiences for shoppers. That's our autonomous checkout system. And you have an app on your phone. That's what lets you just walk in, walk out, and get your receipt automatically. But, you know, so there is a touch point there, so you can go back and look at your receipts, et cetera, put your credit card information in, you know, all that old-fashioned stuff. And then when you're trying to reach the operator, it's also in some ways pretty old-fashioned, right? We're building management dashboards that you can review at your leisure of, hey, here's the heat maps of your store, here's the past, here's how people are moving through, here's the products that are converting really well, here's the products that would be converting well if they were in a better part of the store, right?
Right. Actually, so that's what that's where you would see potentially this area of your store is getting, this is the highest conversion point.
Yeah, exactly.
This is where most people who are here are buying the most. This is your best selling product. Move that over there. You know, it's giving you that information.
Okay. Exactly. You want to do that sort of normalization, right? Because today your POS already tells you I'm selling this many sweaters, right? This, you know, this brand, like this is what's selling best. But you don't know how many impressions those sweaters got. So actually that might be even though it's your best selling item, it actually might not be your best performing item in some sense, right? Like maybe it's getting a ton of it, you know, it's right when you walk into the store. So of course people, you know, it's getting a lot of visibility. Meanwhile, you've got this item that from the point of sale system's perspective is underperforming, but it's actually in the dark corner of your store and only one person a week is looking at it, but they're always buying it every time they see it, right? And it's like, well, that's an opportunity. So having the ability to understand that, normalize it by impressions, which is, you know, this is bread and butter for e-commerce. You can measure the impressions. Bringing that to physical retail is super powerful.
Right. So retail is detail, people like to say, and you've got, it's clear that this, the potential of these tools to, you know, really zero in and make stores or make interactions with shoppers a little more efficient really can make big changes. But this is, I want to broaden out the conversation some because AI is suddenly everywhere. And it seems to be, I think ChatGPT had a big part to do with that. And people are kind of realizing the potential here. And we hear things about, oh, we need to take a break. We need to regulate this industry. What happened over the past couple months with AI? And this is a field that you've been working in for many years now.
Yep.
Does the sudden interest, the sudden explosion of this surprise you? What's happening? Where are we headed with this?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty fascinating. I'm infinitely fascinated by AI, obviously. But, you know, what's interesting is that it's been a pretty steady march of progress. If you're in the field, there's these core metrics that we follow that are like, you know, the accuracy, as an example, of certain systems for different tasks. And there's all these tasks that AI researchers work on in a very academic sense, right? And if you just look over time, there's just been this nice slow increase of accuracy on these various tasks, right? So in some ways, it's just like nice, gradual. But what's interesting from an impact perspective is you get these step functions, right? And as an example, our company, we decided to start standard because we reached one of these step functions. So that was accuracy on image recognition. So you have, you know, you can go back and look at all the statistics or all of the metrics and just nice, slow, steady increase on image recognition on these models. But what happens is at some point you reach human threshold, right? And that's a step function. Sure, like the accuracy is just going to keep going, right? But your capability unlocks in this binary way where like suddenly you can do things you just couldn't do before because it's now better than a human. And that, you know, that was one of the inception points for standard was, well, we need to be able to recognize products on a shelf. And if AIs can do that better than a person, that then suddenly unlocks the ability to do autonomous checkout, right? It wasn't like, from a research perspective, it wasn't this like huge unlock where like suddenly we found this new way to do AI and it, you know, leapfrogged us forward. It was just like, oh, you know, a little bit better. And now suddenly it makes sense after decades of progress. And the same thing's happening now with other techniques. So in generative AI with art, as an example, which was, you know, I think the first thing that caught the world on fire last year, you know, you can watch generative AI for art over the last 10 years. It's just been getting better and better and better. But like 2 years ago, sure, it was like, wow, that's interesting, but it's kind of garbage. You know, for my brain, I would never put this into a movie. I wouldn't put it on my website, right? Like I wouldn't use this for merchandising, but like, is it even better than it was 5 years ago? Yeah, like it's just this slow, steady march. And then suddenly you cross this threshold and it's like, wow, that's better than, you know, you look at Midjourney, which is one of these great generative art models. Suddenly it's better than a professional photographer. It's better than a professional artist in a lot of ways, right? And like, you know, that was just slow, steady march. And then you cross the threshold and it's like, well, now clearly it makes sense to use this now. And then, you know, same thing with ChatGPT. We've had language models that have generated text for years and years and years. And you can just look at their slow, steady march. And then suddenly it's like, wow, this can write an essay better than I can. So now I'm going to use it, right? Like suddenly it makes sense.
So you're seeing an incremental change that those of us out in the civilian world away from AIs, all of a sudden it kind of appears out of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So does it, we've been living in a world of kind of supercharged technological transformation for, you know, 30 years now, and just rapidly one thing after another. And we see some things kind of come and flare out and then can maybe come back or whatever. What right now AI is as buzzy as it can be. Does it stay this way? What do we keep? Does it just turn on, or is this something that kind of goes back underground for a while?
Yeah, it's a great question. In the AI world, there's this notion of AI winters, because, you know, there's been like three or four AI winters, people refer to it. The field itself of AI was founded back in like the 50s, you know, from like the beginning of computer science. It's kind of fascinating. From like the beginning of computer science, which goes back to mid-century, people were already like, oh, what we're going to use this for is creating human level intelligence, right? Like that's clearly why we're not just making adding machines. You know, the luminaries, the grandfathers of computer science and computers, like they already understood the impact. You know, you go back 70 years and like, that's what we're going to do. We're going to make intelligence. And that's the real transformation here. And people got really excited about that, right? Like as we were making progress on computers, people were like, oh, wow, if I can like, you know, play checkers and, you know, start, you know, doing this, you know, that's like where intelligence is, the fact that you can like do this type of planning. So people got really excited, rightfully so, because like if we can unlock intelligence, it changes everything. But then fundamentally it didn't, right? Like it fell short. Products and productization, industrialization of that didn't, you know, getting economic value out of it didn't really arrive. And there's been multiple peaks like that. You know, in the 80s, there was another peak. This peak, I think, is, and people have talked about it, you know, is this just the beginning of another AI winter? And I fundamentally think the answer is no. Like we've reached this point now where the value is just so clear. And it's not just to like experts and insiders and academics, it's to everyone, right? You know, the fact that ChatGPT got to 100 million users faster than any other product in history, right? Like that's not because this is just interesting, it's because it's valuable. Like fundamentally people are using this and seeing the value. The fact that like almost every startup today is an AI startup, I don't think it's just a flash in a pan. Like it's got like flavors of the crypto boom from a couple of years ago where it's like, oh, let's just jump on the new hotness. Except that there is real economic value now. Like we are really driving value and people are hungry for it.
Right. When we first met, you had said something to me along the lines of that you don't need a Steve Jobs of AI. You don't need that one Yep. charismatic figure who kind of takes existing technologies and ties them all together. And then this is, and you know, shines a bright light on the future. Is AI its own Steve Jobs? What?
Yeah, I think that's a great, yeah, I was using that analogy when we were talking about the iPhone as one example of, you know, Apple's built many great products, right? But, you know, I think the iPhone was predicated on technology that already existed, right? Like it wasn't new tech. It was a new product leveraging existing tech, but you needed that, right? Like the tech itself wasn't interesting enough. You needed this visionary who was going to say, we're going to work really hard. We're going to polish this, you know, for years and make this amazing experience. And then finally people will see the light that this is the thing that needs to be part of their, you know, everyday experience, right? And it took a lot of conviction and a ton of money, et cetera. And then they, you know, of course they succeeded, but all the technology already existed for years. That's not what we're seeing with AI. Right? Like we're seeing thousands of companies start, we're seeing people opt into just using this and, you know, bring it into their own personal workflows, right? Like people are figuring out how to do it for sales gen and people are doing it for marketing copy and people are doing it to, you know, just write emails and talk to their loved ones, which is probably not a great application, but people are doing it, you know? So it's just like, you know, it's just like, it's palpable how much, you know, one of our investors calls this the suck, you know, you can feel the suck, which is like, people are pulling it. You don't have to push it. You don't have to convince people. There's no sales part to this, right? It sells itself because people just want it. Once they see it, once they feel it, they're just like, I want this and I'm gonna find a way to keep getting more of this. It's kind of palpable. I think it's also got some of this hacker vibe to what happened in early, you know, when Apple and Microsoft actually were founded way back, there was this vibe in the hacker community of like, we see all the power of this technology. And we want to find ways to apply it, right? There was thousands of people that were just in literally in their garage, you know, the notion of a garage startup, they were in their garage hacking, trying to find cool ways to apply this technology because they had so much conviction that they could. And I think there's a lot of that vibe today of like one person, two people in a garage can just figure something out and figure out a way to drive value. So I think we have that same vibe and we have this like global awareness at the same time. Like you put those two things together, and you add on top of it that the biggest companies in the world are dumping billions of dollars into this. And it's suddenly it's just like every possible incentive structure is pushing this thing forward. I just can't see where to stop.
At the same time, that same dynamic is causing, I think, a lot of people to have concern. Yep. There's talk about government regulation. I think there's a lot of Shopify recently laid off something like 20% of their staff. And one of the things cited was there's a lot of things going on over there, but they also talked very much about we're in a good position to evolve with AI. You know, there's people who are worried about losing their jobs to AI.
Yep.
You obviously believe in AI, but is it also a dangerous technology?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And, you know, we just had the Biden-Harris administration invited some of the top CEOs in the AI space to the White House to start discussing this. There was the blueprint for AI ethics or regulation that the White House also put out end of last year. So I think, you know, that's actually, I'm a former regulator. So I used to be on that side of the house and I'm excited to see the government try to keep pace here, which is great. I think also, you know, fundamentally government is slow and it's incumbent upon industry and also society to just push forward on this. So just having conversations about it is, I think, incredibly important. I think there's two angles here. Like angle one is fundamentally technology is neutral and it can be used for good, it could be used for bad. This is new technology. It has that same flavor, of course, right? But I do think there's a qualitatively different piece of this technology, right? Like it's tapping into what I consider the most powerful force on the planet, which is intelligence. You know, like the reason that humanity is the apex of all species on the planet, and while we've taken over the literally taken over the world, we've reshaped the world. We're also in the middle of a global extinction event because we're, you know, causing sometimes unintentionally, but just unintentionally species are going extinct because of us, right? Like we're not even, there's nothing malicious about it, right? That's how powerful we are. Like without us paying attention, species go extinct because of us. That's insane. And it's all because of intelligence. Like the thing that differentiates us is intelligence. There's nothing else on the planet that has our intelligence, but we are on the precipice of making something else with the same intelligence and potentially more intelligence than us. And what is the ramification of that? And I think there's people who are like, that's really scary. And there's people who are like, look, it's just technology. We'll figure it out. And I think all that is like maybe too dismissive. Like for me, the true answer is it's a fundamental unknown. Like intelligence is powerful is all we really know. And what does it mean to introduce more intelligence to the equation? It's kind of just unspecified, which is scary.
You're making me nervous talking about extinction level events and intelligence and then this even smarter, but we will have to see. And clearly that's the thing though, right? This is a technology that exists and is evolving and many people have their hands on it. And we've seen it in music. We've seen it in art. People are, you know, seemingly tweaking it in their, you know, bedrooms or, basements or something and upsetting entire industries. If you're a CEO on the board, a chief, executive in a fashion company, how do you think about this? How do you keep up with it? Because it's a threat. It's a competitive advantage. I'm sure there's you and other AI service providers are coming. How's the layman or somebody who has not spent the last however many years of their life working in AI? How's the rest of the world process this, understand it, use it, and hopefully not, become extinct by it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's at all levels of the stack of a business. You know, like it starts with your employees, and what's interesting about this tech is it's self-serving, right? Like you can just use ChatGPT as an employee, right? Like you don't need to wait for your company to find ways to integrate AI into your operations. You don't need to wait for it to buy a tool. You can just go use ChatGPT, and a lot of employees are doing that, right? So I think that's cool. But actually, a lot of companies are saying, no, don't do that. We're worried about data leakage. We're worried about some of our IP going into ChatGPT, and OpenAI retrains their model and somehow that leaks out, right? Which is valid concerns, right? But I would say to those companies, like, figure it out as fast as you can, right? Like you can go work with Microsoft, Azure, and get instances of this on like a private cloud where none of that will happen, right? So like figure it out, right? Samsung just announced that they're gonna ban their employees from using ChatGPT. I think it's a huge mistake, right? Like you want to stay relevant, like get out of the way of your employees, stuff with them, and in fact, maybe lean into it. You know, we had this conversation at Standard just a couple of weeks ago, like, should we be banning our employees from using GPT and things like Copilot, which is based off GPT for writing code? My response was, not only should we not ban it, we need to move in the other direction. A lot of our engineers are using this. Why aren't all of our engineers using this? Like, how do we incentivize people? If you get twice as effective using this tech, why should I, some of our employees are using it, some of them aren't. And that's not really a good outcome. We should encourage everyone to be using it rather than sort of having this like implicit haves and have nots. So that's like at your employee level. You can move one step up the stack and be looking for tools that are AI based. If you're doing sales, there's now AI tools that help with marketing outbound, like we said, that can help you generate tools. There's a ton of, in fashion, I'm an investor in this company, Booth AI, and they help with merchandising, so you can generate images for your merch, if you're in apparel, et cetera, right? You could do it a lot cheaper and you can actually generate a lot more interesting images, for that backpack that you're selling or for that jacket that you're selling. So, I would say actively be looking for companies in this space that are moving fast and helping build tools and just, you don't need to make a big commitment, just start playing around with it, encouraging your teams to play around with it. And then there's sort of like the ultimate piece, which is like, do we invest internally in AI? And I think historically that's been completely outside the realm of possibility for most companies. It's hard, we've said every company has to become a tech company, and it's been hard enough for that to be true for you know, especially retailers. Now we're saying like every company has to be an AI company, which is crazy. But actually, it's becoming easier. It's easier than ever to integrate this stuff. And when ChatGPT opened up their API just a couple of months ago, they simultaneously announced a bunch of big companies using it. Companies like Shopify and Instacart, who those aren't AI companies, but suddenly they were just directly working with these AI models to enhance their product, right? They weren't going out and partnering with a AI company to build a tool for them. They just went straight to the AI themselves. And that's becoming that easy to integrate AI into your product.
Right. So we could talk about this all day, but I'll just hit you with one more question. And back to the kind of human question. And I think what there's a lot of this, a lot of people are worried about, there's a lot of concern around jobs with this. And you had just mentioned, you know, you're a CEO, you have people who work for you, you're encouraging them to use AI to when they do their coding and do their work. Does this, and I think that, you know, a lot of people look at this dynamic and see, well, this is going to be layoffs, fewer people, and AI, and how you as a boss were looking at your budget, you could say, oh, maybe I only need half as many people coding if they're twice as effective with AI, and you're running an AI company. So,
right.
You know, there is a vision of this that I hear, you know, people saying like, no, this is people doing better, more interesting work, empowered. You're empowering people with AI. You're not replacing people with AI. I think that's something that a lot of people view skeptically. Is that, you know, how's that changing? And do we have any idea how that changes over the next couple years, the next 5 years, the next 10 years?
Yeah. I think it's a great question. And I do think we are empowering people, and that will, in some places, it'll just be same person working in the same job, doing, you know, more interesting work for the company and for themselves, right? In some places it'll be, we're not going to cut. We're going to just be twice, you know, if each person's twice as efficient, we're going to be twice as productive, you know, with the same stuff. Like, that's great, right? I can ship twice as many features. That's amazing, right? But are there going to be places where cuts happen? I think absolutely. It's just, you know, that is the nature of technology. And then what happens after that, I think, is the question. You know, this is normal for humanity. If you go back, you know, to the beginning of the agricultural revolution, like basically we were all farmers. Now 2% of us are farmers. And that's because of the power of automation. That's been great for humanity. Like, the fact that we've freed up 98% of mankind to go out and work in fashion, you know, work in computers, work in, you know, medicine, like that's been great for mankind. So fundamentally, I think that arc is powerful and good. It's a fundamentally good arc, and it's a disruptive arc that has a lot of turmoil in the interim. You know, the Industrial Revolution, you know, as maybe one of the most recent examples, hugely disruptive, caused a lot of unemployment, and then freed up mankind to do better things. And, you know, fundamentally, we found jobs for those people, but was it a really tumultuous period also for mankind and for a lot of folks who lost their jobs? The answer is yes, right? So, like, ultimately, I'm glad we went through the Industrial Revolution. I think almost everyone is, and there's a lot of people that suffered through it. So I think our job as a society, and this is also partially where government steps in, but I think our job as a society is to say, yes, we are excited about this destination. The world will be better with more automation, just like it always has been. It will free us up to focus on the things we care most about as people, and it will be disruptive in a positive and negative way. How do we mitigate the negatives? How do we make this something that will bring everyone along as much as possible?
All right. Well, it sounds kind of like, buckle up. Big things are happening. All right. Jordan Fisher from Standard AI. It's been great having you. Thank you so much for spending some time for us on WWD Voices.
Excited to be here. Thanks so much.
Okay. Round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire. Huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.